National leaders meet on domestic violence and a nest of spies revelation. Hello, I'm Stephen Clark with the latest from NIRS News. There are growing calls to focus on Indigenous women after recent data showed they're more at risk of violence. It comes after a national cabinet meeting discussing men's violence towards women.
We know that Aboriginal women are 7 times more likely to die from domestic violence and, horrifyingly, 30 times more likely to be hospitalised. Unacceptable statistics by anyone's standards. I'm sure that there will be a focus on First Nations women along with the necessary focus on things like the effect of social media, the participation of men's change behaviour programs.
That was Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians Linda Burney speaking to the ABC. Actions to strengthen prevention efforts, tackle misogynism online, and share information between law enforcement agencies about high-risk perpetrators have been discussed. The federal government says its relationship with India remains positive, despite reports of an Indian spy network in Australia in recent years. National Radio News' Noah Seckham has the details.
The reports suggest Indian spies were kicked out of Australia in 2020 after attempting to steal confidential information about national defence projects and airport security. ASIO boss Mike Burgess revealed the details of the operation in 2021, but did not say which country was behind the network. Treasurer Jim Chalmers told the ABC the economic bonds between Australia and India remain solid.
It's an important economic relationship. It's become closer, I think, in recent years as a consequence of efforts on both sides.
We'll have more after this.
Hey, you mob. It's Naomi Moran, proud Bundjalung woman and CEO of The Koori Mail, our 100% Aboriginal-owned and operated newspaper. Since 1991, we've been a respected source of news and information for our people. Whether it's an important community event or a focus on issues that matter, we've got you covered. So subscribe today by visiting koorimail.com. The Koori Mail is proudly the voice of Indigenous Australia.
Program sponsor.
There are concerns that student debt indexation will make tertiary education unaffordable for many. National Student Union President Nari Bogerman has told National Radio News more students are being faced with mounting debts due to indexation.
The University Accord final report was very clear, and the government has indicated it will be taking up that 80% of all Australians having at least one tertiary qualification by, I think, 2050. If the government's serious about attaining that 80%, well, we need to look at making the system fairer.
Each year, a fee is applied to university debt called indexation, which keeps up with cost of living changes. In 2024, it's expected to be 4.7%, but the ATO is yet to formally confirm the figure. The Albanese government last week floated changes to the HECS system. Pioneering Aboriginal musician Bart Willoughby has been recognised for his decades of work in the industry.
It's been a long road, and all you fans out there, thank you, and can't wait to play.
Mr. Willoughby is the lead singer and drummer for the trailblazing outfit No Fixed Address, which was the first Aboriginal band to score a record deal, tour overseas, and appear on Countdown. He's been named as the 2024 recipient of the Ted Albert Award for Outstanding Services to Australian Music, a gong which has previously been won by the likes of the late Archie Roach, Paul Kelly, Slim Dusty, and Cold Chisel. Home prices in Australia have hit a new record high, going up 0.23% in April. Combined prices across the country are now nearly 7% higher than a year ago. Perth saw the fastest monthly growth last month, making it the strongest performing market in the country. PropTrack's Eleanor Cray says prices are expected to increase, citing strong demand.
Now, with housing supply unable to meet demand across the country, home prices reached a fresh peak in both the regions and combined capitals in April, and we expect prices will continue to rise over the coming months.
And briefly in NRL, South Sydney says it hopes it will be a matter of weeks before they appoint Jason Demetriou's successor, and they have identified ex-coach Wayne Bennett as their first choice target. The last place Rabbitohs sacked Demetriou overnight after the side lost 6 of its first 7 games this season. It sets the stage for what the club calls an exhaustive process to find a replacement for 2025. To stay up to date with NIRS News, follow us on Twitter or Instagram, like us on Facebook and visit our website at nirs.org.au. And that's the latest National Indigenous News.
The National Indigenous Radio Service, the voices of our people.
When someone was sharing intimate images without my permission and threatening me online, I didn't know what to do. One of my aunties told me about the online safety laws and helped me report the abuse to esafety.gov.au. The laws help to keep people safe from severe online abuse and help to remove dangerous online content. Go to esafety.gov.au to learn more or to report online abuse. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
What do you want to do for the rest of your life?
I'm 17. I don't know that. Ask me what I want to do next. Practical courses with flexible choices. To start a diploma and start earning faster. And maybe move on to a uni degree.
Help them do what feels right for right now. At TAFE Queensland. Applications now open. RTO 0275 PRV 13003.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Lord Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today, and we are live around the world via the Yidinji Broadcast Service, and we just hope you're doing well wherever you are listening to this program. We are relaxed. We've got the Attorney General here, Ganyara Yalmabara, the Minister for Education and Social Services, Yirilam Guruminya, and a number of other guests in the studio. And we're going to be talking about, yes, again, another state-based treaty. First, we've talked about Victoria's and how that's going. I must say, though, the Europe Commission's been quite interesting to watch from an evidence point of view. The South Australian pathway to treaty has been and gone, I guess, with very little voter turnout, as reported there a few weeks back. But now, the state of Queensland, the mighty Maroons, have a path to treaty inquiry to begin on the July 1. Queensland's landmark First Nations truth-telling inquiry will begin within weeks following the confirmation of long-awaited appointments, including the chair, whose identity can now be revealed, and that is Joshua Creamer. And that is congratulations to Joshua for that. But we're going to be looking at the actual process from a Yidinji government point of view. And obviously it's not anything against Joshua or anyone else there, but it is having a look at a critically pulling apart why state-based treaties are not really in the interests of the Yidinji nation. But it is an interesting exercise, I guess, to observe. Although I would say that similar things may be achieved elsewhere here with this particular venture. Ganyara, we've maintained consistently on the program that state-based treaties, and not only us, but constitutional experts saying it's not worth a brass razoo pretty much. But obviously Queensland has decided to go down this track.
Yeah, let's call them for what they are. They're not treaties, are they? They're not a true treaty. A treaty, in the true sense of the word, that Aboriginal people really want and the Commonwealth of Australia really need is one where there is a power-sharing arrangement between the coexisting sovereignties. You know, who's going to cede what to who, who's going to be doing what. And that's what a proper treaty is. What's going on in Queensland definitely is not that. And even to say that Queensland is going to go down the treaty road, who said Queensland is the one that we want a treaty with? You know, who's going to offer the best deal? What if the Chinese or the North Koreans or the Americans or the British offer a better deal? Would we be stupid to say, no, we'll stay with Queensland, who is just going to take everything we have, rape, pillage and plunder, which is what they've always done? Or still, absolutely right. You know, this is the colonial world trying to maintain its fraud. It's imitation of being the right thing they're supposed to be here.
Yeah, and the distraction, the aspect of even the point that anyone's even discussing it. What happens next? You know, what happens next is further talk, more talk about something that can never be anything.
So what you're talking about is a can-kicking exercise. They're going to be, this little can's going to be worn out from kicking it down the road for so long. Are they just hoping that the Aboriginal people will just die and go away?
If can-kicking becomes a sport, Murrumba will have to leave Liverpool as a supporter and then go to the World Champions Australia because they're doing it the best.
I'll play for Cairns, Queensland.
That'd be right, yeah, you know, the normal ones. But but in saying that, these aren't treaties. They are definitely not treaties. Now, it's not us saying that. This is both the High Court in a couple of determinations where they said the states or the original colonies were not sovereign enough to enter into treaties, and nor are the states today. The states definitely are not sovereign enough to enter into a treaty, true sense of the word, that is. So if that's the High Court saying that, and then you get the constitutional experts like Greg Craven back, and even in 2015 or 16, he was saying that these will not be treaties, these will not be between nations that have authority at law. You know, these will be just an absolute nothing bar a con. He actually says that these will be a rather unpleasant thing for most people, even the state of Queensland. What about where there is territories, Aboriginal territories, say along the border areas of Queensland, Northern Territory, New South Wales, even the South Australia? What about if their territory overlaps into those states? Will these so-called state-based treaties have any force and effect over the border, or will they have to do another one? You know, it's just a whole racket of... And in my opinion, it's a waste of total waste of money.
It's another example where it's only their way. It has no consideration for the traditional owners, the legal owners, the people who were here first. It's not about how can we work to support them. How can we do the best? What's the best steps to make sure it works for them? It's though we'll work it for us, though. This is the way we want to do it. And in the end, it doesn't work anyway.
And like I said, I just want to remind the world that this isn't anything against Joshua or anyone else involved with it. It purely comes down to a structural critique of it all from the Yidinji government point of view. Joshua is a very, very learned man, and it was one of the... I think he was one of the guys involved with the climb of Mount Everest, really, to raise money for people with depression and that. So I guess the intention there, the goodwill's there. However, I think the parameters are very, very difficult to truly settle the past. What we often talk about here is settling the past and securing the future. It doesn't do that. It certainly gives the illusion of that feel-good factor, but legally it doesn't really remedy Australia's imposition at the moment.
And funny you mention that. It's actually unconstitutional. If they're going to start to describe these things, and this is what Greg Craven, who is a constitutional expert in the Commonwealth of Australia, he is a professor of constitutional law. He was at the Australian Catholic University. And he's the one that's going out saying that these are not treaties, which is what Aboriginal people really want. These are nations that will not exist at law. You know, these are Indigenous Queenslanders. Aboriginal Queenslanders doing a deal with the state of Queensland. What about the Chinese Queenslanders or the British Queenslanders? Can they go and do a deal now? Because this is now racist. Based on a person's race, we're going to let them do some special deal with the state of Queensland? You know, give me a break.
You're mentioning other people from other nations around the world who also have Australian identities. So, am I right, Gunyara, saying that, you know, some other countries do have the allowance that the people or citizens of their country can have dual citizenship? That's normal throughout the world, isn't it?
Absolutely is. You know, there are countries like Australia allows you to have multiple citizenship. You know?
But it doesn't. It doesn't allow Yidinji to have multiple citizenship. You know, our police superintendent just got fined for having dual citizenship.
Because this colonial manifestation has chosen to not legally recognise the sovereignty, the one that they talk about, by the way, the sovereignty that coexists with that of the Commonwealth of Australia. They've chosen to not legally recognise it, which means it's just going to be like the Israeli-Palestinian issue at present. You know, we don't want to recognise them as a state. Well, that's well and good. But our law is here no matter what they say, and our sovereignty is here, and we will assert our sovereignty no matter what happens out there. So we're going to do this, and we may not treaty with Australia, or that we definitely won't be the state of Queensland, because that there is beneath any standing that Australia have, because we don't want to go behind Australia's back. We're going to do it with Australia, or maybe someone else, maybe China. How would it be if the red flag is hoisted over the harbour here, over the inlet? You know, think about that. If we do a deal with China or Britain, if they bring the Union Jack back and fly it here proudly, all the people be in our territory? You know, we got every right to cede our sovereignty. Now, this has been said back in 2017 by a number of senators. We had good discussions over here on the at a couple of the coffee shops on the Esplanade where, you know, they agreed. We got every right, because we haven't ceded sovereignty, we still retain the right to cede it in part or in whole. And we can choose who we want to do a deal with. Now, just because Queensland stick their bib in and say, we're going to treaty. A treaty is entered voluntarily. So what? Okay, let's bring it on. Let's get this treaty thing happening. Bring it on, Queensland. Make this happen.
Well, the issue that will be one that has happened in the past was of Batman in Victoria, which is obviously... he did a treaty with the locals, but didn't have the ultimate authority from the governor or maybe the crown at the time. So even then, it was overruled. Now, in Australian law, if there is an inconsistency between the states and the Commonwealth, then the
Commonwealth, shall prevail.
That's right. So it doesn't matter if Queensland has a treaty. Even though it was legit, let's say it was with Yidinji, for example, it still wouldn't be legit because the Commonwealth of Australia wouldn't, if they were opposed to it, they'd have to spank Queensland on the backside for, exceeding the Constitution. And you can't do that. It's like someone wants to come and do a business deal with you, Gunyara, and talks to your son here, who's, how old are you?
Six.
Can you tell us how old you are?
Six.
6 years old. So that's what I'm saying. You can't... It wouldn't work. If I'm going to do a deal with you, I'll go straight to you because you're the authority of the house. And in this sense, Canberra is the boss. Brisbane is not.
Yep, absolutely. And this is the very problem of the whole lot. That's what I'm saying. Let's bring it on. And we'll do a deal with someone else overseas, a proper deal from another foreign entity. We'll do a proper treaty, conclude it our way, and let's hoist the flag over the harbour here. What will Australia do? What can Australia do? This issue was actually raised last Friday at a meeting here in Cairns. And then one woman asked, is it a declaration of war? No, it's not. It's our ability to bring someone in for self-defence. You know, this will be part of the treaty negotiation. Now, where is the Queensland Army? Where is the Army of the State of Queensland, or is it the Australian Defence Force that we're talking about? How are they going to protect our territory from, say, the Chinese or the North Koreans or the Americans or the British or wherever else it may be? How are they going to protect our territory under the treaty? And this is what most people don't realise. Queensland does not have its own money. It does not have its own Defence Force. It does not have anything that would be part of a real treaty.
It has been relegated to second... prior to the Federation, it was its own, its own colony. But since Federation, it has agreed to some sort of immutable decision to actually form one under the Commonwealth, under the federal government in this case.
The colonies, as the High Court said, the colonies were never sovereign enough to enter into treaties. You know, in the days of the colonies, it was the British soldiers that were here. It was the... Not the Queensland one. Remember, the colony of Queensland was a British creation. So when they all agreed to unite and come together, they formed the Federation. So the people of the colonies left the colonies and become members of the Commonwealth of Australia, which is totally separate, by the way, to the original British, whatever it is, the creation, the manifestation.
But it's still a derivative of Britain because they both don't have an agreement with the Yidinji Nation. A formal agreement, let's say, that we know of, and we've asked, and we have yet to receive one, and I'm sure all the constitution lawyers and experts in the Commonwealth are telling the truth when they say there is no treaty and that Australia is the only Commonwealth nation to not have a treaty with the Indigenous people.
Yeah, and in this area here, they definitely don't have one. You know, we've asked and looked and we've spoke amongst all the elders, we've gone through all the archives and there is nothing here. They just sort of moved into our house and just took over. So they know they don't have it, which is why we're saying the foundation of Australia needs to be secured, not the state doing it. This state-based treaty is just absolute rubbish and rot. Don't go down that trap there. Don't believe what they're saying because they are definitely not treaty. Now, last year, mid last year, they had their circus come around and talk about treaties in the good city of Cairns then, because, you know, it was not, they don't recognise Gimoi, but it was the good city of Cairns. Did you not attend that and listen to what they said? And did they not say that these are not treaties?
I didn't go inside as such, but I hand-delivered certain documents to the people that were facilitating that. But from what I spoke to people who were there, they're just service agreements pretty much. So I think that these are the things that are really important to understand that, yes, these things happen, but it's all about capacity. And we are here to talk to the boss of the Commonwealth. And if that's not Albanese, if it's someone else, then so be it. But, you know, coming back to what you were saying about China, maybe if we did a deal with China, it would legitimise Australia as some sort of middleman broker of some sort, as opposed to, because China has sovereignty, let's say, that would be a sovereign nation-to-nation agreement, and Australia could be its proxy here as a result of that. We just don't know, right?
Yeah, we really don't know, but that's what I'm saying. Bring on these state-based treaties. Just bring it on. Just get it over and done with. Get the rot out the way. Now, let's get into the truth of the matter and be honest. You know, they're talking about, you know, where the government is so honest and so great. Well, tell the truth. These are not treaties, period. Tell the truth. Be upfront with it. Don't tell BS. Don't try and disguise it as something else. These are not treaties. As you said, they're a service agreement, and that's all they are, because they're between Queensland citizens and the state of Queensland. They're definitely not between us, the Yidinji government, whose sovereignty coexists and is unextinguished and unseated. That's where we've got to get to there, to get the state. Now, keep going the way they are. Just waste the time. We're going to keep moving forward. And as it was said last Friday in one of the meetings, go and do a deal overseas. Go and do a deal with anyone else. Let's bring this to a head very quick, and let's see what happens. See where the cards will fall, because in the new multipolar world that's building, remember, the BRICS world is developing its currencies, all its stuff, and maybe they might be offering a better deal to get a foothold on this country.
Well, we'll talk about that, I guess. BRICS has just announced that it's saying that it will support cryptocurrency for global trade, not US dollar.
BRICS stands for
Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, but it's BRICS Plus now because there's Ethiopia and a few other countries that are coming on board, and I think Venezuela is the latest one.
So another form of United Nations?
No, just a trade bloc where people are willing to deal with nations that they're friendly with in terms of trade and commerce. But also, I think we talked about this, Ganyar, about the... They may see that the collective West has been running the world in an unfair manner, and BRICS is forming to, I guess, compete against that and to encourage other nations to join its trading bloc and arrangements. Now, Russia is looking to accept cryptocurrencies to settle cross-border trade transactions and not the US dollar. Russia is advocating to receive payments in cryptocurrencies as a country faces economic sanctions by the US. The Bank of Russia announced earlier this month that it would push cryptocurrency payments with other countries for trade settlements. It's a pretty interesting article. Elvira Nabulina, the governor of the Bank of Russia, confirmed that the country will launch cryptocurrency payments in an experimental style. All precautions and dangers will be monitored during the experimental process before the payment system is fully launched and functional. The country might also push the idea of cryptocurrency payments in the next BRICS summit in the Kazan region in October this year. So, yes, they're doing that. El Salvador is a country in Central America that is accepting Bitcoin as a payment, as legal tender. So it is one of those things where, because it's developing so quickly and lawyers can't keep up quick enough, faster with the changing technologies and development of these things, it appears that it's just going to happen. Now, I'm not saying that the Yidinji dollar is going to be part of that, but you're going to have to wonder, if Australia and its leadership doesn't come and sit down and talk with us soon, then, you know, how are we going to fix the homeless problem here? How are we going to feed the indigenous citizen? How are we going to do all this kind of stuff where it's deteriorating right before our eyes on the Yidinji territory? How do we take responsibility as the Yidinji government to save or to keep this place strong and going?
Looking after our youth, looking after our parents, all of these things.
That's a rather bizarre thing, because quite obviously the Commonwealth of Australia is not really doing that. And the state of Queensland now going down this racist mode, we'll do a deal with someone based on race, you know, because you're Aboriginal or because you're Torres Strait Islander, we're going to do a deal with you. What about the rest of the Queenslanders? You know, do they deserve a fair go? Or you know, this is what's causing division. And I got a gut feeling. My gut feeling is the takedown of the collective West, the imperial world, the colonialism that's out there, still out there. If you look at all of those, the Western nations, New Zealand, for example, has it got the right to be down there when they do have a Treaty of Waitangi between the British and the Maori people? And those who didn't treaty, they still have their sovereignty that's unceded and unextinguished down there. What about the Indigenous in Canada, for example? I see there's a bit of stuff going on there on the west coast there with the Haida Nation getting their, you know, sovereignty recognised and talked about and discussed, and they're getting back to their land. What about the Indigenous people of what they want to call continental United States, you know, the block there, all the Indians that were in that country, what, for the want of a better word, they're Indigenous people, not Indians, you know. And remember, Indigenous is a rather collective term. It's a big term. It's better than, to me, Indian or Aboriginal, you know, because we're Yidinji. We're not Aboriginal, we're Yidinji. So we've just been here forever and a day, so we call it for what it is. What about the Indigenous people around the rest of the world, you know, that are in the purview of the British colonialism, for example, you know, where they were, you know, or in New Guinea? Who's got the right to there, you know, those Indigenous people up on the hills there?
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting question, because when you look at Britain, they've certainly, in the process of building their empire and deconstructing it, have left a huge problem, and Israel and Palestine is one of those. Here is a problem, not of the same magnitude, but certainly there's a lot of pain and injury and hurt done here, and it continues today. So it remains unsettled, and this is the whole point of the Yidinji government. It's here to settle the past, to remove all the pain, guilt, whatever may be there, to say enough is enough, let's move forward together and let's work together to make this a better place. Now, that's not happening at the moment because, you look at the issues of youth crime and other things. Report after report and recommendation after recommendation aren't being adhered to or implemented in certain places, and you're getting the same results. And if you're going to keep doing that, you're just as mad as the people running the show if you think that's going to work, because it's not, which is exactly why the remedy lies with the Yidinji.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you don't have to be Albert Einstein to work this out. You know, it's very, very simple that the foundation of Australia was wrong. It was, they just took the place, and they've sort of, you mentioned Palestine and Israel there, for example, where there's been probably 30,000 deaths already. But hang on, let's go back to the genocide that took place here by the British, mind you, when they come in, and it was continued by the Australians after they took over. And we're not talking 30,000 people. We're talking hundreds of thousands of people, and everyone has turned a blind eye to it. No one wants to be accountable for it. Yet things like the Yurok Commission down in Victoria are really highlighting some of these issues, that it was just, you know, just a brutal massacre when they did come in. So no one's talking about that.
I think I saw a question posed, and I do stand corrected, but it was a question to one of the government ministers there. Out of the $83 billion, how much was given directly to Indigenous businesses, organisations or authorities? Not $1.
Of course not.
So, you know, the model is wrong. It is British imperialism continued. It is a post-colonial tea club called the Commonwealth of Australia, called the State of Victoria, called the State of Queensland, whatever you want to call it. Old mate still running the gravy train, doesn't want to give it up, and the rest of the citizens aren't really truly aware of it all. But we know what's going on. and it's time for it to end.
No, the average Australian is just happy to keep it going. You know, because really, look, the country is a pretty safe place. You know, there's a bit of crime going on, but it's not like in the Middle East. It's not like in, you know, Middle Europe there between Russia and you know, the West. You know, it's pretty calm compared to that. When you go into countries like South America there, they're pretty wild down there, pretty lawless. Even in the US, you know, there's a lot of issues over there.
Yeah, but that's not because the reason why it's peaceful here is because Aboriginal people have been know what the value of peace is. This is the reality of it all. And, you know, in some places it would be easier to die quickly than it is to suffer for generations, being absolutely dispossessed of everything that has been given to your family and your clan and your tribe, and constantly seeing that every day being repeated over and over again. So there is it's how you look at it, you know, and I think that's a very important thing to remember. Yes, it's peaceful here, but it's not because of the British.
No, that's for sure. That's what I was saying. You know, the average Australian doesn't see this because it's not in their interest to go and look now. It does get raised occasionally, but, you know, and that's where the 97% bung on a turn. Oh, them lazy Aboriginals, you know, they get the Land Cruiser given to them every second week, don't have to pay for it, they get a house. Give me a break. I haven't seen any Land Cruisers, and I haven't seen any houses myself, and I know a lot of the people in our mob haven't seen the Land Cruisers or the house or the money or anything else. The Aboriginal people have every right, by the way, under their sovereignty, to raise a standing army, just like what happened over in the Middle East or elsewhere. We've got every right to go and do that. Mm. But do we want to go and do that? You know, do we want any more of our people killed off and murdered or massacred, all for the sake of trying to settle the problem that Australia created or the British created, not us?
Well, if we do that just makes us like the invaders that came.
Oh, you're as bad as them. That's right. You know, to take a life is not the Aboriginal way. You know, there was a few issues where you had to remedy certain land grabs, for example, where it was pretty savage. I will give it that. You know, there was corporal punishment, there was capital punishment back in those days. But it's nowhere near like what the British perpetrated. That was just brutal murder and massacres and just straight-out genocide.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country, and we'll be back after the break.
This is Billy Ross here. I want all you great people out there to tune in to BBM 98.7.
Yeah, welcome back. Earlier in the year, late last year, rather, the Yidinji government were invited as guests to participate in a legal philosophical exercise by the Australian National University's College of Law, and just to see what a nation-to-nation treaty would look like. And, of course, we travelled down there with our friends from the Birriggubba Nation and the government there, and the idea was partly because of Dr. Professor Asmi Wood.
Asmi, welcome to the program. It's not your first time, I know that, and we love having you on. Talk about these workshops. There's a lot of talk about treaties. People often mention that, whether it's the Uluru Statement or they're talking about sovereignty. But maybe people take them through what an actual treaty is, because a lot of people may not know what they want from a treaty, for example, which is why I guess this exercise took place in the first place. But talk a bit about that.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very grateful to you for your participation and you know, bringing other communities here to Ngambri Ngunnawal land where the ANU is situated to look at things which are absolutely vital to Aboriginal people moving forward. I think Uncle Michael Mansell said in 2003 how small communities, whatever that means, are much more true to the true to the notions of their own people, whether you agree with them or not, than what he, I think, obliquely says are assimilated Aboriginals to some extent. So treaty is a legal agreement between two nations, nation to nation. If you remember Mr. John Howard, when he said we were all Australians, said you can't make a treaty between yourselves. But that's if you consider everybody Australian. Many Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people do not. accept that characterization of their people. But as we found in our exercise, when you have two communities that assert their nationhood, that fits into the Montevideo Convention, which talks about permanent populations, knowing your borders, having a system of governance, having methods of dealing with people, you know, whether people call it citizenship or belonging. These terms don't matter, but you really live, breathe, and behave as if you were a nation, and you assert it. So in international law, assertion is important. Of course, it's not always easy when you're dealing with a very strong party on the other side, but nonetheless, you've done this for a long time, and I know you've done this for a very, very long time. So the idea of a treaty is that you have a people like Yidinji, and we have another group, Birigaba, who probably haven't done this for as long as you have, if I'm not mistaken, but you've brought them along a long way. You've helped them. You know, there's a huge mutual respect between the two communities. You behave in the way we understand our ancestors to have behaved, with love, courtesy, kindness, mutual respect, all of these things which we want our people to project and to enjoy as well. So you have two sovereign nations entering into agreements between each other. Of course, there are some technical issues that go with it, which we covered on the first day, looking at, you know, how nations normally behave in this kind of situation. And, you know, you behave like two nations really entering into treaty with each other. There was no there was nothing to say that you were not bona fide nations entering into treaty in good faith, considering the law, not ignoring law. And there was a meeting of minds on many things. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to go through all the provisions that we could have used, but the provisions that we did cover were done in an amazing way. I might remind you that the treaty negotiations went on to very late that night, you know, where you had a bit of dinner and continued to pore through the text and the concepts, as most nation states do. So you behaved in that way, which was really exciting to see.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. And what I loved about the exercise was that there were lawyers there, there were students, which was really great because they participated and got immersed into what we were doing. And I think that's really important to, when we're talking about spheres of law and different types of law, I mean, obviously when you look, I'm walking down the road here at the college, and there's family law, there's criminal law, there's corporations law, but you know, where I see the ANU and some other institutions leading that space is Indigenous-specific law. Not just as a side dish, let's say. And to be fair, I it was done in a culturally safe space. And that's a very important thing. And congratulations to the ANU for providing that space. So these spheres of law that we talk about is something that the students can consider and look at and see what is this, because it's something that may come to surface in reality in the next few years, because everyone's talking about treaties, everyone's talking about, you know, what they want from the Commonwealth of Australia, for example, if that's the one they choose to treaty with. So I think it was very beneficial to all parties involved.
Yes, I think the culturally safe space was created by the two nations themselves. There was a lot of preparatory work that we did with you about what were your expectations, and we tried to do our best to accommodate as much as we could of those. In terms of the students, we had quite a few Aboriginal students, and we also had some non-Aboriginal students and lawyers. So the benefit for the Aboriginal students is clear, that they can see this is really what our communities back home should be endeavouring to do. You know, one of the things that I think Uncle Michael had said is Western education is great, but a lot of our kids go there and become assimilated. So these kinds of programs help to pull them back from that coercive assimilation, because they see how elders behave, they see how elders treat each other with respect, and they see the fidelity and the and you know, that deference to elders and things that we always talk about, but perhaps, I'm not saying you, but sometimes it's not always evident in our communities. So them seeing these things is fantastic, and they take it back hopefully to their own communities. For the non-Indigenous lawyers and students, the experience was amazing. I think one of the judges who I won't name, who was at the moot on the final day, he said if he had seen this process taking place, some of the cases that he decided in the past might have been decided quite differently. So this is a matter of education, not just for some people, but for all of us. I mean, I feel I learned so much from the process. And that was a common refrain. A lot of people said that they learned a lot. I can't remember how many years ago, talking to you about these issues, and when what you were doing seemed quite outside the box to, you know, if that doesn't sound too crude, of how, you know, you develop your own law, your own systems of governance and exercise your self-determination. I think the first overhead that I put up was, first they laugh at you, then they join you, and then you defeat them. I mean, that was, I think, what Mahatma Gandhi said. And I think the arrogance of the strong sometimes is their downfall. And the humility and the fidelity of what they would call weak. I don't think you're weak by any stretch of the imagination, but that's how they perceive us. And the Uluru statement talks about the powerlessness of Aboriginal communities, which I didn't see in your communities, because your elders spoke strongly, powerfully, forcefully, politely, and, you know, with a great degree of integrity.
Yes, we would probably say that powerlessness may be experienced by Indigenous Australians, as opposed to, obviously, the Yidinji Nation is moving forward, but there's a reality check there too. I mean, it's a difficult road. But, you know, it's one that, if we don't do it, who else is going to do it for us? And I think that's where there's a real sense of amongst the, let's say, the legal community here at the ANU, a very big interest in how that shift in or closing that gulf of representation, or whatever you want to call it, or self-governance, for example, how will that be achieved, and what is the model? And you know, the written law is really good, because there are lots of examples on the type of models you can choose, and those international laws and standards are very important, because it's something that you can use like a tool, and hence they are instruments. But I like the fact that this is going to possibly lead to bigger and better things, and that there'll be a lot more acceptance around institutions, not only here but abroad, about that, looking at this unique window of seeing it from the Indigenous point of view, which you may not get, or you may get inside the Commonwealth of Australia. It depends on what you're looking at. But, you know, these the ability to create law and the grundnorms that the tribal societies have. Now they have these tools that they can pick up and start to use. And we would say for the peace, order, and good governance of their community, their nation, their tribe, their mob, whatever. But also the important part that these things need to take place for true settlement or security of for all persons in the future. And that's a really big thing that we spoke of on the day of that that moot. And I think some of the students were really excited by that because they could see that there needs to be this other interaction from this other party. We just can't be talking about X group and whatnot, but not talking to them. And as I often point out, that the Yidinji government is the voice for the Yidinji nation because it's created by the Yidinji nation. It wasn't one that we had to ask permission for someone else to give it to us or whatnot. So, but I don't want to confuse those issues. But the importance now of legal experts like yourselves and practitioners working together in saying what would be the most appropriate model, how do you want to move forward as a group or a nation?
So the answer to that, because we believe in self-determined communities, is up to your community. As lawyers, we serve your community, not because we are Yidinji, but because we are brothers in a different kind of way. One of the most fascinating things I heard that came out of your negotiation between Yidinji and Birigaba was this. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People talk about minimum standards. And, you know, the settler colonial countries really pushed our people down in terms of what they could expect. But you didn't buy into that. You didn't buy into that. What you said was, you're going to set your own standards, which are moral, which are truthful, which are transparent, and going to set those as a minimum standard. Now, what this does for a whole group of Indigenous people around the world is to lift the whole ship. The ship rises with the tide, and what you're doing is lifting the tide. You're just pushing everybody up. This is not something that I've ever seen among Indigenous communities, because I think largely they feel beaten down. I didn't sense that either community of yours, but there was a kind of this is who we are. Yes, we have to, you know, interact with other people, but there are certain standards that we will not lower because we want to be true to ourselves. So this is an absolutely fascinating thing, because it really allows us as Indigenous people on this continent to raise the standards, something that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. And that was wonderful. We still have to do it, but if you know where you're going, you're likely to get there. If you don't know where you're going, I mean, you know, then you're going to sort of walk hither and thither. Yeah,
and you know, what Bumi said, you know, was really touching at the end there when we were debriefing, that we're not criminals. Like that's what it is. Like we're not criminals on our own territory, but we can see that the need to use the written law now to express to the world and describe to the world and codify what our values are. Like you said, you know, and that's an important thing. Whereas possibly in years past, those standards or whether we agreed with them or not, they impacted on our lives. So it's really good that that these matters were put on the table for consideration. And I think that really gentle approach that you earlier mentioned by both nations there, it did have a huge impact on the students, for example. And when we were having dinner, they were talking about, you know, what would a better world be like? I mean, if the written law is there to create a better world, and how can that fundamentally be, let's say, become more real because, you know, there's injustices all over the place, and sometimes the written law doesn't provide a sense of true justice or truth even, you know. These are versions of truth, and people will want some sort of ultimate truth, I guess. So I think that was an interesting exercise as well. What was some of the feedback from the students about being part of this exercise?
I think they found it absolutely fascinating. They said nothing they've learnt at law school even remotely compares to this, which is true. You know, we only talk about one law. We don't really talk about plurality. We don't talk about Indigenous issues other than what the High Court has said about it. This is quite traumatic for our students. You know, it's not something that non-Indigenous people understand. But when they come to a space which is truly Indigenous, and we are attempting to use Indigenous norms without ignoring other people's norms. Nobody ever said, well, to hell with the rest of the world, we're not going to deal with them. Nobody ever said that. They said, well, we'll deal with them. And I think one of the examples that came out was what good faith might mean. You know, good faith is a beautiful word, but it's not always exercised in its spirit. I think the delegates on both sides wanted to define some of the qualities of good faith, and that is truthfulness, not misleading the other side, you know, acting with transparency. It's a whole lot of words that, you know, you see from time to time in different cases, but not articulated in that one spot, in that one particular kind of way. So I know we didn't do this, but one of the things I hope that would come out is that we create a dictionary of terms for treaty and define these terms in the way, you know, the two communities have defined them. I think that would be, you know, and when we deal with other Indigenous communities, to say this is what we hold good faith to mean, and, you know, we will not stoop to the kinds of behaviours that other nations have stooped to.
Yes, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. If you're listening inside the Commonwealth of Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Check your local station about who's broadcasting that. But we'll be back after the break.
Yo, this is Bala J. You're listening to BBM 98.7.
Well, that brings an end to the show for today. Ganyara Yurlam, some final comments.
Yeah, look, call it for what it is. Call a spade a spade. Don't go on with the lie. Don't continue the insult. Don't continue the, you know, we'll just treat these like dumb Murrays. You know, don't start that caper, Australia, or Queensland mainly. I think Premier Palaszczuk last year, was it in her speech to launch the tracks or the part, the treaty, whatever they wanted to call it, said that the days of ignorance are over, you know, it's got to stop now. Well, I'm afraid to say that the Premier, the State Premier, has been ignorant, but more so arrogant by saying this, we're going to go down this state-based treaty road. So don't tell BS, tell the truth of the matter.
And the other thing too is that why would the ANU College of Law, one of the top law colleges, institutes in Australia, be entertaining the idea of a treaty-to-treaty nation between the Yidinji and the Birrikuppa?
Well, actually, ANU is number 20, I think, in the world, in the law college, in the law. So it's the number 20 university out of the globe, by the way. So they wouldn't be making this statement rather lightly and just say, oh, it's just a joke. This is deadly serious. And look, Queensland, the Premier, don't tell BS. You know, get rid of the arrogance and the ignorance and start to understand what we're talking about.
Well, get rid of the racist attitude. But Yurlam, some final comments?
Yeah, you know, most people would wonder, like Ganyara pointed out before, that this attempt to do any sort of treaty based on a race is a racist act. So realistically, Australia is just continuing what it's been doing since the very beginning, is segregating. And unlike... there, like we talked about during the show, that there can be people living in Australia who have dual citizenships. Unlike any other person from any other country, even if they are born here, the first people who own this land are the rightful owners of it, and that's the only people that can do the treaty, not an Australian citizen.
That's right. And you know what? The most important thing to realise is that, you know, Well, there's all these different groups here, Mullumbura and, Kunganji, Jabakai. It doesn't matter. Like, you can't write these groups out of existence. We're not going to let that happen. And everyone has the right to, as Yidinji did and still does, right, with Binal. Binal was shell money. And that's the way we did business. Now, we've digitised that shell money and that's ready to go. Now, if it doesn't mean that Australia is a loser. It just means that we're in charge of our affairs. But the problem being is that there's a very, very oppressive system that wants to stop the Indigenous nations, the pre-1770 societies, by going down this path by offering trinkets and beads and blankets. And that's one of the things where we won't allow that to happen in terms of the Yidinji nation, that is. But anyway, that's it for this week's program. Gaya Barakala Nyundu, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this program, in the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach. For He is the way, the truth and the life. For more information about the Yidinji government, you can go to www.yidinji.org, and we'll catch you next week. Garu.
I was a kid, I had a dream, I had a baby. $1 million flow, but the bro ain't even made it. The bigger that you get, you don't figure they gonna hate it. Your energy, your descent, my brother, stay motivated. If they wanna see you fall, my brother, stand tall. With your back against the wall, put your heart and give your all.
It's my therapy, this factual. Gotta say what I feel and always keep it practical. I can read your body energy, no second guessing. They gave me the answer without me popping the question. I don't want your loyalty if it ain't from the start. Claiming that they love you, hiding demons in their heart. Reflections of their actions come to light, and that's the karma. Power of positivity, my buffer of the drama. I'm motivated for the kids, I don't need nobody else. Give it everything I got, and I could do it by myself. But if we chasing the same dream, teamwork to make it better. Let's do it for the people, paint the picture together. I'm gifted within the meaning and sisters who I believe in, and guiding me on my dream, and my brother keep on proceeding. I'm struggling, fighting demons, and let it out when I'm grieving. Ambitions I keep on achieving, this music is so
ever
believable.
Since I was a kid, I had a dream, I had to pave it. $1 million flow, but the bro ain't even made it. The bigger that you get, you don't figure they gonna hate it. Your energy, your descent, my brother, stay motivated. If they wanna see you fall, my brother stands tall. With your back against the wall, put your heart and give your all.
See, all I really know is the struggle we come from, yeah. Just hold on, yeah, won't be alone, yeah.
I always put my money on the long shots. You told me give for gifts, so I'm giving all I got. Them DV screens, my alarm clock. See my brother staying on the homicide. The haters gonna hate me, but they can't break me. That's how my mama raised me. Do this for my babies. I ain't seen sunshine lately. Tears on the daily, my people gone crazy. I'm an unchained slave, circle breaker betrayed. Since back in the day until they laid me in the grave. Against all odds, but this fist will be raised. Their story's being told, but we're flipping the page. But I know my people very strong. We got the strength to carry on. And through this country we belong.
Ever since I was a kid, I had a dream, I had to pave it. $1 million flow, but the bro ain't even made it.
The bigger that you get, you don't figure they gonna hate it. Your energy, your descent,
my brother, stay motivated. If they wanna see you fall, my brother, stand tall. With your back against the wall, put your heart and give your all.
See, all I really know is the struggle we come from, yeah. Just hold on.
You're listening to BBM 98.7 FM.
Tune in now.
Have no place to go. Have no place to go.